This is the introduction for Decatur, Part 1.
Hello, this is Atta Durakan with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Tuesday, January 15th, 2019. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, "The Pritzker Administration Possibility and Promise, J.B. Pritzker Optimistic as Term Begins." It's articles by John O'Connor from the Associated Press from Springfield. Billionaire J.B. Pritzker took the oath Monday as governor, giving Democrats nearly unprecedented power at the State House after 4 years of divided government only worsened the economic woes of a state billions of dollars in debt. He used his speech in part to call on more resources for downstate Illinois and faced criticism from Republican leadership about his tax plan. "At 200 years old, Illinois is still a young promise," said Pritzker, who became the state's 43rd executive 6 weeks after its bicentennial. "We must begin a new century with new maturity and enough foolishness to believe we can make a difference. That starts with leadership that abandons single-minded, arrogant notions. No, everything is not broken." The 53-year-old heir to the Hyatt hotel chain defeated Republican predecessor Bruce Rauner in November. Throughout his 4 years in office, Rauner clashed with Democrats who dominate the legislature, contributing to the longest stretch without an annual budget of any state since the Great Depression, and driving the state's credit rating to the brink of junk status. Pritzker offered a cooperative future while blaming the stalemate on Rauner and his insistence that only a complete reboot could fix broken Illinois. He also said he sees an Illinois of possibility and promise. "That's the Illinois I know, one whose people are fearless and audacious." The governor, during his speech at the Bank of Springfield Center, also said the state must bring a renaissance to downstate Illinois, which has been deprived of some basic resources for education and business building that are taken for granted elsewhere in our state. Said the governor, to begin, "We will work to deliver high-speed broadband internet coverage to everyone in every corner of Illinois. Today, every new job and every student is dependent upon connectivity, and no part of our state should be left out." State Senator Andy Mainar, Democrat of Bunker Hill, in a statement said the people of downstate Illinois have been overlooked and neglected by the state's leaders for years. "I'm thrilled the governor sees the same promise and resilience that I see in them." Mainar serves on the governor's transition team. Decatur Mayor Julie Moore Wolf and Illinois AFL-CIO President and former Decatur Mayor Mike Kerrigan also are on committees. Circumstances have set the bar low for Pritzker's success. Rauner's demands for his business-friendly anti-union agenda in exchange for a state spending plan hit a buzzsaw in the Democrats who controlled the General Assembly. Chicago Democrat Michael Madigan took the gavel last week for his 18th term as House Speaker, a tenure covering all but 2 years since 1983. The longest-serving Speaker of a state House in U.S. history brought with him near-record legislative majorities. In the past 140 years, the 74-44 Democratic House majority is second only to the party's strength in 1965-67, and the Senate's 40 Democrats to 19 Republicans matches the 2013-2015 count, and as a percentage falls behind only the Democrats' 1935-1937 majority. Pritzker repeated pledges to create a long-desired capital construction plan to fix roads and bridges and make a push in the just-begun General Assembly to legalize the recreational use of marijuana and its hoped-for $1 billion in annual tax revenue. And Illinois' flat-rate income tax system, which turns 50 this year, is unsustainable, according to Pritzker, whose $3.2 billion net worth ranked him 251st on Forbes' Wealthiest 400 Americans last fall. He reiterated his promise to change the state constitution to create a progressive system that forces the rich to pay a greater percentage of income. Our regressive tax system has the middle class paying more than double the rate the wealthy pay. That's not fair, and it also doesn't pay our bills, Pritzker said. Today, our state's fiscal instability affects every single person who lives and works in Illinois, whether you earn millions or the minimum wage. Illinois GOP Chairman Tim Schneider released a statement Monday that said Pritzker's plans will not be effective at stemming the population loss and other challenges. It's clear that Governor Pritzker's agenda will be the same agenda that has dragged our state down for decades. Borrow, tax, spend, repeat. Over the course of the election and again today, Pritzker promised billions of dollars in new spending, programs, and regulations, all of which our state cannot afford, he said. Illinois taxpayers know well the fiscal foibles, which predate Rauner's term. Overdue bills to total $7.5 billion and a $130 billion shortfall in what the state owes to its pension plans continues to haunt politicians who repeatedly shortchanged it. The Rauner administration last fall predicted the current state budget will fall $500 million short at the end of fiscal year June 30th, although tax revenues in the first 6 months of the budget year ran 10% ahead of the previous year. After Monday's inauguration, Democrats comprise Illinois' entire statewide slate. Incoming Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton and Attorney General Kwame Raoul were inaugurated. Secretary of State Jesse White, 84, took the oath for an unprecedented fifth term. Beginning second terms were Treasurer Michael Frerichs and Comptroller Susana Mendoza, who shortly after her November re-election entered a crowded field to replace retiring Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel in February's election. Pritzker, during his speech, also pointed to the cooperation of Taylorville residents after a dangerous tornado swept through the community in December. Pritzker visited the scene shortly after, and there are some photos that accompany this article. Governor J.B. Pritzker and his family, daughter Teddy, wife M.K., and son Donnie take the stage during the Illinois inaugural ceremony at the Bank of Springfield Center Monday. Democrats have nearly unprecedented power at the State House after 4 years of divided government. In the other photo on the front page here, we'll get back to that. Governor J.B. Pritzker acknowledges the crowd after being sworn in as the state's 43rd governor during the Illinois inaugural ceremony Monday at the Bank of Springfield Center in Springfield. Moving on to the next article on the front page, Central Illinois GOP, wary but hopeful in the era of Pritzker. This is by Tom Lissy from Decatur. Local Republican lawmakers and organizers are hoping they can find agreement on some legislation with new Governor J.B. Pritzker while they try to rebuild a state party that has lost big at the ballot box in November. I hope that we can find some common ground, Republicans and Democrats, to work on the issues that will bring Illinois back to our rightful place in the national economy, said State Representative Dan Calkins, a Decatur Republican who won the open seat in the 101st House District in November. But many of the legislative priorities Pritzker made in his inaugural address Monday are an anathema to the GOP platform, like a graduated income tax that sets higher marginal rates for residents with high incomes and a $15 minimum wage, policies that area Republicans believe will drive businesses and residents out of Illinois. A graduated income tax would need approval from voters and three-fifths of the General Assembly, since it requires a change of the Illinois Constitution. If such a move succeeded, Mohammed Republican Senator Chapin Rose said it only hurts the state's ability to retain residents. People that can will move, and they already have, he said. Republicans across the state are using the state's loss of residents as an argument that high taxes, particularly local property taxes, are driving the trend. The U.S. Census has estimated the number of residents in Illinois has shrunk for 5 straight years. The state lost more than 45,000 people between 2017 and 2018, according to the latest data. It doesn't look like there's going to be any resolution to anything anytime soon, Macon County Republican Party Chairman Bruce Pillsbury said of the state's financial woes. If Democrats in Springfield can continue on the status quo of spend all the time and create new programs instead of cutting spending, if all we do is try to tax our way out, more residents will leave the state. Area Republican lawmakers identified one potential source of bipartisanship, a capital spending bill that would provide much-needed funding for local roads, bridges, and potentially public buildings as well. I think there's a lot of willingness among Republicans to cut a deal on infrastructure, Rose said. Anyone who's driven in and around Decatur knows how badly our roads are in need of repair. Mattoon Republican Senator Dale Ryder, who also pointed to infrastructure as a measure his party members could work with Pritzker on, said that bipartisan support also will depend on a plan that spreads projects around the state. If the governor sends the signal through the plan that he puts out that he appreciates Interstate 24 or Illinois 50 down in the southern part of my district, or US 45, are just as important as some of the roadways in Chicago, the governor will get strong interest from the Republicans on that, Ryder said. But Republican lawmakers will enjoy almost no control over the levers of power in Springfield. In addition to Pritzker, Illinois Democrats won a supermajority in both chambers of the General Assembly. Local GOP leaders say how the party in Illinois moves forward is a common internal debate among Republicans. One is the narrative that the reason Republicans didn't do well is because we are too conservative, too strident, Ryder said. The other narrative is Republicans are trying to act too much like Democrats, and voters can't tell the difference. Ryder said he believes his party suffered in state office elections due to the unpopularity of President Donald Trump and ex-Governor Bruce Rauner in suburban Chicago districts. Republicans always need to evaluate what they're saying to voters, but there's a danger here in overreacting, Ryder said. For his part, Calkins, a freshman in Springfield, would like to help remake the party. For the most part, this is a conservative part of the state, he said, of the southern half of Illinois. You see, the values, the cultures, the neighborhoods, the cities reflect more conservative politics that can make the party more relevant. Rose said his party needs to keep their platform to simple things that resonate. I think Republicans need to be for lower property taxes, for better schools, against gun trafficking, and for economic growth, he said. And if you do those things, I think folks will respond. In the November elections, Republicans in Macon County made historic gains that benefited primarily U.S. Representative Rodney Davis of Taylorville and GOP candidates for county office, including County Clerk Josh Tanner, Treasurer Ed Yoder, and the County Board, which now holds a 12-9 Republican majority. I don't think the Republicans could be any happier with how Macon County is shaping out after the election, said Dustin Chapman, Treasurer of the Macon County Young Republicans. Chapman said the state GOP does not need a major shakeup. I fully think we need to focus on trying to get no new taxes and really trying to turn the state around to make it more business friendly and, quite frankly, more friendly to residents, Chapman said, because it can't keep going how it's going. There is one photo that accompanies this article. Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton is sworn into office by Adrienne Davis. Moving on to the next article on the front page, the Macon County election, sheriff's race lawsuit awaiting judge selection by Ryan Voiles from Decatur. Litigation that could solidify or reverse the result of the Macon County Sheriff's race is awaiting assignment of a judge to oversee the case. It's been nearly a month since Jim Root, the GOP sheriff candidate, petitioned the Macon County Circuit Court to name him to the office after a race that saw Democrat Tony Brown win by a single vote, 19,655 to 19,654. Both were top lieutenants in the department, where they each have served for many years. The case has since been moved out of Macon County to prevent any conflict of interest. Brown began his tenure as sheriff on December 1st. Root and local Republicans spent several weeks gathering evidence of multiple errors they said were made during the election, hoping to persuade a judge that the wrong person was named sheriff. Root and Republicans have raised a number of issues since a November 30th discovery recount, a non-binding process that the losing candidate can undertake to find evidence that would prompt a judge to order a full recount. Issues cited by Root include two ballots for Root in Hickory Point Precinct 1 were, for reasons still unknown, not counted on election night. A ballot for Root was not counted. On it, the voter placed an X next to the names of the candidates for whom he or she wished to vote, rather than darkening the box next to the candidate's name. A ballot that was originally marked as an undervote, a ballot on which not all races received a vote, was marked as a vote for Root. It was found during the second discovery count on December 16th. Two votes for Brown were not initialed by any election judge as required by the election code. Under state law, a recount must be ordered by the court system. Root is responsible for the cost, even if the election results are overturned. Root is not seeking a full recount. Instead, he asked the court to include the two uncounted ballots with the final election results and to implement a full manual recount of Election Day ballots cast in Hickory Point Precinct 7, where the other ballots at issue were cast. Root and Republicans will have to continue their wait for their day in court. Initial plans for Champaign County Judge Thomas Stefanis to oversee the case. Brown's attorney, Christopher Scherer of Springfield, filed a motion late last week to substitute the judge. The petition did not give a reason for seeking a different judge, but noted that each party is entitled to one substitution of judge without cause. Scherer, when reached Monday afternoon at his office, said it's his policy to not comment on pending litigation. Now it is up to Carl Koritz, chief judge of the 6th Judicial Circuit, which includes Champaign, DeWitt, Douglas, Macon, Moultrie, and Piatt counties, to assign a new judge to the case. The legal maneuvering began shortly after the original petition was filed on December 19th by Root's attorney John Fogarty of Chicago. The next day, Macon County's presiding judge A.G. Weber referred the matter to then-Chief Judge Richard Brock, who assigned the case to Stefanis. It is unknown how long it will take before a new judge is assigned to the case. Through his secretary, Koritz said he does not comment on ongoing cases. Fogarty did not return a message left Monday on his cell phone. Root declined to comment. Brown did not immediately return a message. And we move on to page A3. This is the local and state section, Decatur government. Council approves city manager contract. This is by Tom Lissy from Decatur. Members of the Decatur City Council expressed their welcome and excitement for Scott Wrighton to become city manager Monday night in a special meeting when they unanimously approved his contract. This was a long process, but it was very important to this council to find the right person to lead this city in the future, so we are very excited, said Mayor Julie Moore Wolf. I feel very fortunate that Scott Wrighton has agreed to be our city manager, and we hope that it is a very long tenure with us. Wrighton's contract was approved with a 6-0 vote. Councilman Bill Faber was absent. He later told the Herald and Review he was homesick, but he fully supports the new manager. Wrighton will earn a $185,000 salary in his first year of the contract. The council will perform annual reviews of his performance each December. The contract stipulates at which time the council would decide to give Wrighton a raise. The terms remain largely intact from the city's previous contract with former city manager Tim Gleason, with some notable exceptions. There is no expiration date, but after 5 years from his start date, Wrighton would no longer be eligible to receive a 20-week severance if the council decided to fire him. Gleason left the top city executive job in July to take the same position in Bloomington. Gleason's move to Bloomington came 3 months after council members approved a 2-year contract with a 6% raise. At the time of his departure in July, Gleason's salary was $176,507. In his new position, Gleason's salary matches Wrighton's at $185,000. Deputy City Manager Billy Tyus is doing the job on an interim basis until he moves to a Deputy City Manager position in Bloomington under his old boss in Decatur, Gleason, on February 7th. Tyus's last day as an interim city manager is February 6th. The city council will need to install a new interim staff member at the job if Wrighton starts later than that. Last week, Wrighton said he was hoping to start work in Decatur in late March. Wrighton is finishing up his job as city manager of Streeter, a position he's held for more than 4 years. He was also a city manager there from 1987 to 1994. Moore Wolf said Monday night the council was still working out details of the transition. Wrighton's contract also allows him to do consulting work on vacation days with clients that are based outside of Illinois. The work must also pose no conflict of interest to the city. After Monday's special meeting, Moore Wolf said the council was comfortable with allowing Wrighton to do consulting on his own time. "Actually, we think it's an asset," the mayor said. "It's always good to get perspectives globally. Having someone whose eyes are not always focused on Decatur can really open some other opportunities." After the meeting, Wrighton said since he took a city manager role in a venture in India, a project in which private developers built and managed what was essentially a new city, he has advised overseas clients on matters related to managing local governments. Wrighton said one factor that drew him to the job was that the council was a hard-working group committed to delivering for the city. "It's also clear there's a lot of people, stakeholders in the community, want to come together to make a difference in the community and see Decatur grow," Wrighton said. "And there's strong staff, a lot of depth and institutional knowledge. That's a great combination." Under Decatur's form of government, the city manager is the head municipal executive, responsible for hiring and firing employees and overseeing all city operations and departments. Elected city council members set goals and general directives for the city manager to carry out. In his discussion so far with the council, staff, and community leaders, Wrighton said he was excited to get going. "I think we're off to a great start," he said. On to the next article, murder suspects in custody, 3 arrests linked to fatal shooting at Long John Silver's. This is by the Herald and Review from Decatur. Police said 3 arrests have been made on preliminary charges of first-degree murder in the wake of the shooting at the Long John Silver's in Decatur, including a man who had been treated for life-threatening injuries following the incident. Detective Sergeant Chris Copeland confirmed that Matthew A. Anderson, Jr., 20, was detained by the U.S. Marshals Service on Friday after he was well enough to leave HSHS St. John's Hospital in Springfield, where he was treated for gunshot wounds. Anderson is being held in the Macon County Jail on $1 million bail. The shooting, shortly before 6 p.m. January 4th, at the restaurant at 701 West El Dorado Street resulted in the death of 18-year-old Curtis T. Hairston. Copeland said the second suspect, a 15-year-old Decatur male, was detained on January 7th, but his name won't be released because he is a juvenile. The third suspect taken into custody was identified as Jaquarius L. West, 18, who was detained Monday morning in Caruthersville, Missouri, also by the U.S. Marshals Service acting on a Macon County arrest warrant. West will be held in Pemiscot County Jail in Missouri until he can be extradited to Macon County, Copeland said. Pemiscot County is about 3 hours south of St. Louis, off Interstate 55. The investigation is ongoing, and there may be additional arrests, Copeland said. He added that none of the victims or suspects were employed by Long John Silver's. Preliminary charges are subject to review by the Macon County State's Attorney's Office. On to the next article, Cat Workers Donate Meat. This article is by Jalen Cook from Decatur. Caterpillar Inc. donated about 6,900 pounds of pork products to the Good Samaritan Inn on Monday, and officials say it's the largest donation the food kitchen has received from the company to date. The Reverend Stacy Brohard said the donation was the result of Caterpillar employees deciding to give the meat packages they received as company Christmas gifts to a community organization instead of taking them home. Monday wasn't the first time Caterpillar employees have opted to donate their Christmas meat packages to the Good Samaritan, he said. The variety of meats, which includes several hams and sausages from Heinkel's packaging, will be enough to provide about 25,000 servings at the Decatur Soup Kitchen at 920 North Union Street. That poundage of meat will get us clear through spring, said Brohard, executive director of the Good Samaritan Inn. It's huge. Brohard said the donation was a sign of how generous Decatur is as a community. All right, there's not enough time to start a new article, so we'll be taking a short break now, and I'll be returning with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Tuesday, January 15th, 2019. Please stay tuned, and we will be right back.